When the lights go out, they speak. The vanished, the cursed, the cruel. Their echoes live here. I'm Raven Vale, and you've just crossed the threshold. Welcome to Whispers from the Dark. Welcome to Whispers from the Dark. Tonight's episode, The Girl Who Walked Into the Storm. The Disappearance of Asha Degree. There are certain elements that when they appear together in the same story, produce a specific kind of unease that ordinary mystery does not. A child. The middle of the night. A storm. A deliberate departure. Each of these things is unsettling in isolation. Together they form something that has sat in the minds of everyone who has encountered this case for over 2 decades and refused to be filed away into any category that makes it comfortable. Because the question at the center of the Asha Degree case is not the standard question of a missing person's investigation. It is not, where did she go? Or even what happened to her. It is something that precedes both of those questions. It is, why did she leave? And that question, that specific, foundational, unanswered question, is what makes this case unlike almost any other in the history of missing children. Because children who are loved do not walk out of their homes in the middle of the night without a reason. Not this deliberately. Not this quietly. Not in a storm. Not in the dark. Not with a backpack already packed. A departure like this one requires motivation. It requires something powerful enough to override every instinct that a 9-year-old child possesses. The instinct toward warmth, toward safety, toward the known and familiar people who occupy the home behind the door she opened and walked out of. Whatever that motivation was, it has been the central mystery of this case for 25 years, and it has not been answered. What we know about Asha Degree, we know mostly through the people who loved her, through her parents, Harold and Ikwa, who have spent over 2 decades speaking publicly about their daughter, because silence felt like abandonment. Through the community in Shelby, North Carolina, which has carried this case the way small communities carry their most unresolved wounds, with ongoing grief, with periodic renewed effort, with the specific civic memory of a child who belonged to them and was taken. Through the investigators who have worked the case across the years, who know the details better than anyone, and who have never been able to assemble them into the shape of a closed case. Asha Degree was 9 years old. She lived with her parents, Ikwa and Harold Degree, and her brother O'Brien, in a modest home in Shelby, North Carolina, a small city in Cleveland County, in the western part of the state. By every account available from the people who knew her and loved her, Asha was not a child who presented behavioral challenges. She was not a risk-taker. She was not prone to wandering. She did not have a history of sneaking out or testing the boundaries of her home environment in ways that would have placed her in conflict with her parents. She was described as shy, quiet, close to her family. A child who followed the rules not out of fear, but out of something more. Internal, a natural inclination toward safety and compliance that the adults in her life had no particular reason to worry about. She was a good student. She was an athlete. She played basketball and had a genuine interest in sports that was a source of connection with the people around her. She had friends. She had a life that was, by every visible measure, ordinary. In the best sense of that word. Stable. Safe. Full of the small, particular details that make up a childhood. There was no history of abuse that investigators discovered. There was no pattern of deception or secretive behavior that anyone who knew the family could point to as a precursor to what happened. There were no warning signs of the kind that, in retrospect, tend to mark cases where something has been building. Nothing that a teacher had flagged. Nothing that a friend's parent had noticed. Nothing that gave the adults around Asha any reason to believe the child they were watching go about her ordinary days was carrying something they couldn't see. By every external measure, Asha Degree was a normal 9-year-old child in a stable home environment, which is precisely what makes the events of February 14th, 2000, so resistant to ordinary explanation. On the night of February 13th, a Sunday, the eve of Valentine's Day, Asha's family watched the Super Bowl together. Super Bowl 34, the Tennessee Titans against the St. Louis Rams, the kind of family evening that is unremarkable in the best possible way. A house full of people, the television on, the ordinary warmth of a shared domestic moment on a winter night. Outside, the weather was doing what North Carolina weather does in February. Rain, wind, temperatures cold enough to make the inside of a house feel like the obvious and correct place to be. Not brutal cold, but the kind of persistent, wet, penetrating cold that makes anyone sensible choose warmth and cover over whatever might be outside. At some point during the evening, both Asha and her brother O'Brien went to bed. The adults settled in, the house wound down, the storm continued outside. And somewhere in the hours between bedtime and morning, between the quiet of a family home at rest and the pale edge of a winter dawn, Asha Degree got up. She dressed herself. She packed a backpack, her school backpack, or a bag she had prepared, filled with the small objects and belongings that would later be found, first partly, and then more completely, in the weeks and months to come. And she walked to the front door, opened it, and stepped outside, into the rain, into the cold, into a February night on a rural stretch of North Carolina that offered no shelter, no light, and no one who was expecting her. She did not wake her parents. She did not wake her brother. She did not leave a note. She did not make a sound that anyone in the house heard. She simply left. The door closed behind her, and the house remained as it had been. Quiet, warm, dark, with no indication that anything had changed. No indication that the child who had gone to bed down the hall was no longer there. The first confirmation that something was happening came from strangers on the highway. In the early hours of February 14th, in the dark and the rain on US Highway 18, south of Shelby, drivers began noticing a small figure walking along the road. A child. Alone. In conditions that no child should be alone in. One driver, passing in the pre-dawn dark, saw her and was alarmed enough to turn around, to go back, to check on her. The headlights swept back along the road, and the child ran, not toward the car, away from it, into the tree line off the side of the highway, into the woods, into the dark. Gone. The driver, unsure what to do, continued on. There was at least one other reported sighting of a child matching Asha's description on Highway 18 that night. By the time anyone was able to act on these sightings with the urgency they deserved, Asha had already moved beyond the reach of what casual observation could locate. When her family discovered she was gone, when the bed was found empty and the absence became real, the response was immediate. Harold and Ikwa contacted law enforcement. Search teams were organized. Volunteers came out. Law enforcement deployed every resource available to a missing child case. Dogs, ground searches, aerial coverage of the surrounding terrain. The highway where she had been seen. The woods she had run into. The fields and properties in the area. Everything within reach of where she had last been spotted. The particular urgency of a missing child case, especially one where the child was last seen in conditions as dangerous as a cold, wet night on a rural highway, mobilized resources quickly. But quickly was not fast enough to close the gap between where Asha had been and where she had gone. The search found nothing that told investigators where Asha had gone after she entered those trees. But it found something that told them she had at least stopped somewhere along the way. In a shed not far from the highway, a structure on private property off the road, investigators found items that appeared to have belonged to Asha. Candy wrappers, a pencil, a marker, small objects, the kind of things that accumulate in a school backpack over the ordinary course of a week. She had been there. At some point in the night, in the dark and the rain, Asha Degree had stopped in that shed, had taken shelter in whatever protection it offered from the weather outside, had been there long enough to leave behind physical evidence of her presence. She had rested, or waited, or sat in the specific stillness of a child who is in a place she did not expect to be, making decisions about what to do next. And then she had gone. To somewhere that the search, in its early days, could not reach. To somewhere that, in the weeks and months and years that followed, would not be reached at all. The detail that most complicates every simple explanation in the Asha Degree case is the behavior of the child herself on that highway. She saw a car coming back. She understood, at 9 years old, on a dark highway in the rain, that the car was coming back for her, that someone had seen her and turned around, that the headlights sweeping back in her direction meant attention, meant a person, meant the possibility of help. And she ran, not toward the car, away from it, into the woods, into terrain that was darker and more dangerous and less navigable than the road she had been walking. This single decision, this specific, deliberate movement away from what looked like safety, has sat at the center of the Asha Degree case for over 2 decades. Because it tells us something, not everything, but something. It tells us that Asha, at the moment that Carr turned around, did not want to be intercepted. That whatever she was doing on that highway in the middle of the night was something she was committed to continuing without interference. Whether that commitment came from something she was moving toward or something she was afraid to return from is the question that has never been answered. The two possibilities sit in opposition to each other, and each one is devastating in its own way. The first possibility is that Asha was going somewhere specific. That she had been told, or had been made to believe, that there was something on the other end of that walk that she wanted, or needed, or had been promised. That an adult had established some form of contact with her, through school, through the community, through whatever channels an adult seeking access to a child might use in the months or weeks before February 14th, and had created in her a reason to leave, a reason powerful enough to override her natural caution, a reason compelling enough to make her dress in the dark, pack a bag, and walk into a winter storm rather than remain in the warm and safe environment of her home. Under this theory, Asha ran from the car, not because she feared the driver, but because she feared what the driver would prevent her from reaching. Because she had somewhere to be. And a grown car stopping on the road represented the obstacle between her and wherever that somewhere was. This theory requires the existence of an adult who had access to Asha, who had developed enough of a relationship with her, or had constructed enough of a compelling fiction to motivate a shy, rule-following 9-year-old to walk out of her house in a storm in the middle of the night. It requires someone who understood the specific psychology of a child like Asha well enough to appeal to whatever it was she valued or wanted or feared. It requires the kind of grooming that leaves no visible mark on the surface of a child's ordinary life while fundamentally altering the inner landscape. The kind of contact that feels to the child like friendship, like specialness, like being chosen, rather than the exploitation it actually is. Children who are lured from their homes by adults who have established inappropriate contact do not typically experience that contact as threatening. That is the specific horror of the mechanism. The adult has positioned themselves as someone trustworthy, someone exciting, someone who understands the child in a way the child believes no one else does. Someone who has promised something, an adventure, a meeting, a secret that belongs only to the two of them, that the child has been anticipating with something that feels, from the inside, like excitement rather than danger. A 9-year-old who believes she is walking toward something wonderful doesn't hesitate at the door. She does not leave a note. She does not wake her parents. She goes. Because going feels right. Because the person who told her to go has made it feel that way. And that the contact was invisible enough to the adults in Asha's life that it left no trace they could identify afterward. The second possibility is darker still. That Asha was running from something, not toward something. That whatever drove her out of the house that night was not a promise but a fear. Something in her home, or in her life, or in the circumstances surrounding her that was frightening enough to make the storm outside feel safer than whatever was inside. This theory requires something to have been wrong in Asha's environment that the investigation didn't surface. The investigators who worked this case looked carefully at every person in Asha's life. Her family was extensively investigated and cooperated fully. Nothing was found. No evidence of abuse. No evidence of a situation that would explain a flight response of this magnitude. The family has maintained for over 2 decades that they do not know why Asha left, that they have no explanation, that the child who walked out of their house that night is not a child they recognized in that behavior. The investigation's inability to identify a source of fear or trauma does not definitively rule out its existence. But it does mean that the running from theory currently has no evidentiary support, which leaves us, as so much of this case leaves us, in an uncomfortable middle ground where neither explanation fully closes. Then there is the backpack. More than a year after Asha disappeared, in June of 2001, a construction crew working on a highway project in Turner County, South Carolina, approximately 26 miles from where Asha was last seen, made a discovery. A child's backpack, buried, wrapped in plastic, placed deliberately in the ground. Inside the backpack were items belonging to Asha Degree. Her belongings, her things, buried in a location that was not accessible to a 9-year-old girl on foot in a county more than 20 miles from the highway where she had last been sighted. The backpack had been wrapped in plastic with enough care to preserve its contents. It had been buried with enough intentionality to conceal it from casual discovery. It had been placed there by someone who wanted it hidden, and that someone was not a 9-year-old child. This detail, the buried backpack in South Carolina, is the pivot point of the entire investigation. Before it, the case was a missing child with an inexplicable departure and no confirmed subsequent information. After it, the case is something else. The backpack changes the calculus in a way that cannot be argued around. Whatever happened to Asha DeGree in the hours after she disappeared from that highway, an adult was involved. An adult who had access to her belongings, who drove or transported those belongings to a location in South Carolina, who took the time to wrap them in plastic, to dig a hole, to bury them in a field in a county that had no obvious connection to a missing girl from Shelby, North Carolina. The burial was intentional. The preservation was intentional. The location, 26 miles south, across a state line, suggests either planning or the kind of opportunistic disposal that someone makes when they need to put distance between themselves and evidence they cannot explain. Someone who knew what the backpack contained, who understood that its contents connected them to Asha, who decided that burying it was safer than any other option. That is not the behavior of a bystander. That is not the behavior of someone who encountered Asha on a highway and helped her and then lost track of her. That is the behavior of someone managing evidence. Someone with something to hide. And that someone has been out there for 25 years, still not identified, still not charged, still not brought to account for the burial of a 9-year-old girl's belongings in a field in South Carolina on a date that has never been confirmed and for reasons that have never been explained. The discovery of the backpack transformed the Asha DeGree case from a missing child investigation into something with a clearer shape. It confirmed the involvement of at least one adult. It confirmed that Asha had not simply wandered into the woods and been lost to the terrain. What it did not confirm was the identity of that adult, or what happened to Asha after she left the highway, or whether she was alive when her backpack was separated from her. The FBI joined the investigation. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has kept the case active. Asha's case has been featured on national television programs. The DeGree family has never stopped advocating for answers. And the person who buried that backpack in South Carolina has never been publicly identified. Let's talk about what the investigation has and hasn't established in the years since Asha disappeared. Law enforcement has conducted extensive interviews with individuals in Asha's community. They have followed up on tips that came in from the initial media coverage and from the periodic renewed attention the case has received over the years. They have worked with the FBI and with national missing persons organizations to maintain the case's visibility and to pursue leads as they surface. They have investigated specific persons of interest at various points, individuals who came to the attention of investigators through community information, through behavioral patterns, through proximity to the events of that night. None of those investigations have resulted in an arrest. None have produced a charge. None have been publicly confirmed as definitively resolved in either direction, as cleared or as identified as responsible. The investigation is ongoing. The case is active. And the specific identity of the person who buried Asha's backpack in a field in Turner County, South Carolina, remains the central unanswered question. One dimension of the case that investigators have explored, and that the public conversation has returned to repeatedly, is the question of what happened in the days and weeks before February 14th. Specifically, was there any change in Asha's behavior in the period before she left? The answer, according to the people who knew her, is that there may have been something. Small things. Nothing dramatic. Nothing that would have stood out as alarming in the context of an ordinary week in the life of a normal 9-year-old. But in the days before her disappearance, some people who were around Asha noticed what might be described as a preoccupation, a quality of being somewhere else in her mind, even when she was physically present, a quietness that was slightly more than her baseline quiet, a distraction that had no obvious source. Asha had been reading books. Specifically, she had been reading a book called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, and a book about running away. The second detail, a 9-year-old girl reading a book about running away in the days before she ran away, is one of those facts that is impossible to evaluate cleanly. It could be coincidence. Children read books about subjects that have nothing to do with their internal circumstances. The act of reading about something is not evidence of intention to do it. A child reading about dinosaurs is not about to encounter a dinosaur. A child reading about running away is not necessarily planning to run. But it is also the kind of detail that, once you know what followed, sits differently than it would in any other context. It is the kind of detail that a parent finds in retrospect and carries for the rest of their life with a specific weight that ordinary parental memory does not carry. What was she thinking about? What was she working through? Was the book something she found on her own, browsing a library shelf or a classroom collection? Or was it something someone recommended to her? Was it a 9-year-old's ordinary curiosity about a topic that children sometimes find compelling precisely because it is transgressive? Or was it something more specific than that? A child rehearsing something in her imagination that she was about to rehearse in reality? These questions do not have answers. They sit alongside the hundreds of other questions this case generates and will not be resolved without information that has not yet surfaced. The sports connection is another thread investigators have examined. Asha was athletic. She played basketball. She followed sports with a genuine interest that was visible to the adults around her. Some investigative theories have suggested that the motivation to leave that night may have had something to do with an event or a person connected to her athletic life. Whether a coach, a mentor figure, someone at the school or in the broader community who shared her interest in sports had established inappropriate contact with her. Whether that connection, if it existed, was the source of whatever pull she felt toward that highway in the dark. Whether the promise that drew her out was framed in terms of something sports-related. A game, a tryout, an opportunity. Something that would have felt, to a 9-year-old girl who cared about basketball and believed what she was told by adults she trusted, like something worth getting up for in the middle of the night. This remains speculative. No specific individual in Asha's athletic or school community has been publicly identified as a confirmed person of interest. But the theory reflects a real and documented pattern in cases involving children who leave their homes without apparent reason. The pattern of the trusted adult who has embedded themselves in the part of a child's life that the child values most. Asha Degree would be in her early 30s now if she is alive. Her parents, Harold and Ikwa, have lived for more than 2 decades in the specific suspension of a case that has never closed. They have given interviews. They have participated in renewed investigative efforts. They have never stopped being the parents of a missing child, which is a role that does not have a retirement, a resolution, or a rest. They have carried the not knowing with a dignity that reflects the specific love of people who refuse to let the absence of an answer become the end of the story. The Cleveland County Sheriff's Office has maintained the case. The FBI continues to be involved. Asha's image has been updated with age progression photographs showing what she might look like as a teenager, as a young adult, as the woman she might be today. These age progressions are among the most quietly heartbreaking artifacts of any missing child case. They are an act of imagination in the service of hope, a refusal to let time make the search feel less urgent. Periodic leads are pursued. The case appears every few years in national media coverage, generating new tips that are evaluated and mostly lead nowhere. But some of them lead somewhere. Some piece of information that seemed disconnected eventually connects to something else. And the picture shifts slightly, and investigators move in a direction they weren't moving before. That is how cases like this resolve. Not in a single dramatic revelation. In the slow accumulation of small confirmations until something finally becomes clear. And the person who buried the backpack continues to be somewhere in the world, aging, living, possibly believing that 25 years of distance has made them safe from an investigation that has never formally closed. They may be right about the distance. They are wrong about the closing. There are things in this case that will not be filed away. A 9-year-old girl on a dark highway in the rain who ran from a car that was coming to help her. A shed where she stopped. A backpack buried 26 miles south in a field in South Carolina. A family that has been waiting for over 2 decades. These things do not age the way ordinary evidence does. They do not become less significant with time. They sit in the permanent record of a case that is waiting for the one piece of information that connects the person who buried that backpack to the night a child walked out of her house and into the dark. That information exists. It is somewhere in the memory of someone who was there, in the knowledge of someone who was told, in the conscience of someone who has been carrying it, perhaps, for longer than they thought they could. The storm on February 14th, 2000 eventually ended. The rain stopped. The night became morning. The world kept moving. But in a specific sense, in the sense that matters most to the people who love Asha Degree and to everyone who has ever encountered this case and been unable to let it go, the storm has never fully ended. It is still there, in every unanswered question, in every lead that didn't close, in the specific darkness of not knowing what happened to a child who walked into it. And it will continue until the answer comes, until the storm finally breaks. This has been Whispers from the Dark. I'm Raven Vale, and somewhere out there, someone knows what happened to Asha Degree. The question is whether they'll say it before the storm runs out of time to carry the sound. If you have any information about the disappearance of Asha Degree, please contact the Cleveland County Sheriff's Office at 704-48-44822 or the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI.